is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We are going to begin our program today looking at the issue of immigrant day laborers who are under attack in New York with Nadia Marin Molina. And I want to begin by reading a piece from the newspaper. Around 1 a.m. on July 5th, the police said, a neighbor saw someone in a black vehicle throw a flaming object through the window at 45 Granny Road. Neighbors still celebrating the 4th of July heard shattering glass, saw the flames, and helped rescue the 4 adults and 2 young children inside. Now the Suffolk County Police Department, the FBI, and the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of New York are investigating whether it was a bias crime. But even without answers as to who did it and why, the fire has sounded an eerie echo on what happened on September 17, 2000, when Israel Perez and another worker who lived in the house next door were lured to an abandoned building in nearby Shirley with the promise of work, then attacked with digging tools. Well, the tensions have been intense out on the island, and the attacks and provocation by white supremacists, xenophobes. Well, we'll find out more from our guest, Nadia, who is the executive director of the Workplace Project in Hempstead, New York. Welcome to Building Bridges.
Thank you. Hi, Mimi and Ken. I think, you know, to understand what's going on in Farmingville, you have to look back a few years and see that for the past few years, as the Latino community, in particular the Mexican community, has grown in the area, there have been increasing tensions. And it was in 1999 when we first started to get involved because we saw anti-day labor legislation being proposed at the Suffolk County level. There were a series of legislative battles where anti-immigrant groups tried to create legislation that would attack immigrant workers, and some of that was able to be defeated, other ones weren't. So now the attack that was in September of 2000 and the attack that come now come in the context of a long-term situation there.
Now, have there been attacks in between these two events?
There have been attacks, but they've been, you know, they haven't gotten as much attention because they've been smaller. But workers who are in the Farmingville area, not as commonly now as before, but certainly would ride down the street on bicycles and find that people threw rocks at them or bottles. Workers had their windows broken in their homes or were physically attacked in the street. There were some documented incidents of one house, for example, where there were bullets through the front door and windows. That was never solved as to who committed it. And there were other documented incidents as well. I mean, there are many more, but people often don't come forward with them.
What I don't understand is, we're talking about workers who perform meaningful functions that are in demand in the community. What has provoked, how do you understand the antagonism, the hostility, the virtual risk, not virtual, the actual risk to people's lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as you mentioned, day laborers are a vital part of the economy here, and not just here, but in all parts of New York. A recent study showed that there were day laborers, not just in, there are day laborers on Long Island.
Let me just stop you for a minute. I assume most people know, but just in case they don't, why don't we just say what day laborers are and then continue?
Oh, sure. Day laborers are the workers who wait for work on the street corners in the morning. Usually the jobs tend to be in the areas of construction, painting, building construction, or sometimes residential. I would say more often residential than building. And all the very dangerous, hard jobs that there are and that the economy needs are what the day laborers are waiting for. And sometimes they're hired by contractors, companies, large and small, or sometimes they're hired just by individual homeowners who need help with cleaning their yard. And day laborers exist as people from all different countries. There are people who are, the majority in the New York area are Latinos, but there are day labor corners in Queens that have Sikh Indians performing heavy labor. There are also day laborers in Brooklyn that the Latin American Workers Project works to organize who are women who are doing house cleaning work.
Then what's the antipathy? These are people who perform vitally needed tasks. why does the community not welcome them with open arms?
Well, I mean, you have to say some parts of the community, if not with open arms, are certainly not challenging their presence because they realize how much they and the community in general depend on them. So there are, you know, members of the community who recognize that the day laborers are just, you know, people trying to make a day's living and trying to get by and support themselves and their families. But there are some people who see the day laborers as a threat to them, to their way of life. And the fact is that some people have been influenced by groups in other parts of the country. There are militia groups in the areas of Texas and California. There are anti-immigrant groups like American Patrol, and they have been involved in Farmingville. And so local groups, which might have started out just worrying about issues like traffic, suddenly find immigrants as the scapegoat for the problems that they see in their community, are given this analysis by national organizations like FAIR and American Patrol, and then they start to activate it at the local level on this issue.
Nadia, what are some of the day-to-day problems that the day laborers have with the employers that they shape up for each day?
The most common problems that we see are unpaid wages, where workers work for a day or for a week or even a month, and the employer fails to pay them at all for the work that they do, or sometimes pays them less than the promised wage, and injuries on the job. These workers are working in very dangerous construction and other kinds of jobs, and a lot of times are injured. We've had deaths in Long Island in the past couple of years as well.
I still don't really understand the mentality in Farmingville.
One thing to mention as well is that the day laborers are a very visible target. So day laborers are out there, you know, on your street corner every morning. You know, for the community, which some people, you know, in Long Island have moved out of the city in order to avoid what they say. They say, well, we don't want our neighborhood to turn into Queens. They have an idea of what Long Island should look like, and the workers out on the street corner are not part of their concept of what Long Island should look like. And part of it is racism, and part of it is protecting their property.
But this seems to be a little different than just a nascent attitudinal racism. There really is a systemic level in this community. There are radio stations that I understand. There are newspapers that have been organized. This is a fairly sophisticated and high level of antipathy that seeks to literally put people in such a precarious situation that they can lose their lives. I mean, there were children in this house, and interestingly, as we stated, it was right next door to the house where two workers were beaten within an inch of their lives. So what's going on in that community on that institutional level that gives such ferocity to the efforts against the immigrant workers?
That's difficult to say. I think that you're right in the sense that there has been, you know, anti-immigrant sentiment in different parts of Long Island that hasn't gotten to the point where it seems to get in Farmingville. I think that part of it has to do with the fact that the anti-immigrant groups are more organized there and have gotten, you know, more intervention from the groups at a national level, whereas the groups in other parts of Long Island tend to be local neighborhood associations who aren't necessarily connected with other groups at a larger level.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other communities on Long Island also, because there have been some instances where some good things have happened, like in Freeport, and I believe there's another community where actual hiring halls were constructed. Can you talk a little bit about those communities and what kind of benefits accrued from such hiring halls?
Exactly. There have been sites set up in Long Island so far in Glen Cove. There's one that's been operating for a long time now, about 10 years, but it was shut down and a new one was created about 2 years ago. One in Freeport, which started last year, and that one we played a role in very closely with the mayor, with Catholic Charities, and a bunch of different community organizations at a local level. And there's also one in Huntington, which was set up, I think, about 3 years ago. In all of those places, really the idea was to diffuse some of the community tension created by the traffic issues that come up when the workers are out on the corner and the trucks are stopping all over the place in the street to get to them. So it's just to provide an alternative location. That's sort of the initiating force. And then But the place has become more of a center for workers where they can get English classes and computer classes and other sorts of information and help and can really organize to start facing some of the issues that are hitting them.
Now in Farmingville, since you mentioned diffusing the tensions and Ken referred to, and you elaborated on hiring halls,
mm-hmm.
what needs to take place there? What kind of organization will protect these workers, and has the political apparatus mm-hmm. of Farmingville in any way stepped in to assist or, for that matter, hurt the workers?
In Farmingville, in fact, after the two workers were attacked in September of 2000, the Suffolk County Legislature took up a proposal to create a hiring site that they would have, the Suffolk County would have put in funds to create a site that would have addressed the issue in Farmingville to some extent. They approved it, and then the county executive vetoed the measure, and then they were unable to override his veto. And so as a result, nothing was ever created in Farmingville with regard to a hiring site, which really could have been a starting point for addressing some of the community tensions, and that was never created. Since then, our organization has been working with a series of community organizations, but in particular a local group called Brookhaven Citizens for Peaceful Solutions to, you know, at a smaller level, create things like English classes and, you know, address the issue of unpaid wages because, you know, if we can't work immediately on a shape-up site, then we figured we would work on smaller issues. But who knows, it may be that now with this most recent attack that there will be the impetus again for some political solutions.
Well, we've also been joined by two workers who are from Brooklyn, and I'm going to allow them to announce themselves, and the workers are...
My name is Oscar Paredes. I'm Executive Director of the Latin American Workers Project.
Hi, my name is Juan Valentin. I'm organizer for the Latin American Workers Project with their labors in Roosevelt Avenue in Queens.
Why don't you just help us understand more, Oscar, what is happening in Brooklyn, where there are also groups of immigrant workers?
The situation in Brooklyn is a little bit different than Long Island. Brooklyn, we're working together with police, Precinct 62, and Bensonhurst. So that happened because in the beginning, we organized the workers and organized the church and the politicians in the area, and we make a lot of pressure because in the beginning, the police harassing a lot to the laborers, and also they try to put the workers out to the community. And when we start to organize, we create a lot of pressure.
Ask you about the currents that is happening now that really you had told me hadn't been happening before. In the last couple of weeks, you had said that the police are not only harassing the workers, but they're referring them to the Immigration Service for deportation. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Juan is the right person to talk because he's organizing Roosevelt and Queens. Yeah. That happened then.
Yeah, for the last weeks, the area of Roosevelt, especially on 69th Street, the police start to arrest some day laborers, like in different days and different times. But we know it's not only the police, that was a kind of undercovers. And now we know there were some people from the FBI arresting people in different areas of Queens, like for day laborers, got arrested and got deportations immediately because the FBI got these people in the house. So last week, the police continuously is arresting the day laborers, but with no reason, because they know they are there waiting for job on the streets.
Nada, you've listened to your two brothers here. I was just interested in whether or not the police have played a similarly negative and aggressive role in Farmingdale.
Well, in Farmingville.
Farmingville.
Which is where.
Farmingville. I've got to get my.
Well, there's Farmingdale and there's Farmingville, and
yes,
each one has their own.
Exactly.
Their own issues. In Farmingville, the police has not taken that kind of stance. They've wanted people to come forward up until now. We're going to see what happens. And what we have seen locally was actually in Hempstead, which is where our office is located, that one of our leaders here, who was a leader among the day laborers in Freeport, was arrested by the Hempstead Village Police and turned over to INS, or I should say to Immigration, because it's now Homeland Security. And we had not seen this kind of collaboration between the police and Immigration before. And so we are, you know, we have been trying to talk to the police, and we're trying to determine what kind of collaboration is going on with them, because it seems something that the Hempstead Village Police is sort of going out of their way to collaborate with Homeland Security when there's no particular need for them to do so. Other police departments, I understand, have not been doing the same.
And that's why I explain a little bit the situation on Benson Road and Bay Parkway. So even though this security project on land, something affects a lot to the Latino workers.
You mean the Homeland Security?
Yeah, that affects a lot, because the police persecute the street vendors on the street. They persecute the day laborers, and for no reasons. And they arrest them, and then also they open criminal records for them. And they've been, you know, exposed to deportation just for trying to survive or, you know, work or waiting for a job on the street.
Juan Valentin?
Yeah, with all kind of action by the police, the old workers, I mean, especially the laborers, are scared. So we try to organize. We try to give the information, the laborers, and human rights with all these the laborers. But it's impossible when the police is arrested and it's like kind of harassment on the streets. So that made more difficult to organize.
Well, I just wanted to clarify something. Perhaps you had said it before, but in this particular instance where the FBI accompanied the police, was it one instance or were there many instances? I'm just trying to get a sense of whether this is a new policy that's being formed that might go citywide, or if this was one instance so far only.
So at this point, so many, we know it's the FBI because I was on the newspapers after a few weeks with the day laborers on Northern Boulevard got arrested. But at this moment, there's like many, many, many undercovers that area, because they're explaining are looking for some kind of Latino terrorists. And for now, it's not making any sense. Like, it's weird. No, it's like, what kind? What is?
We should also mention that a good friend of ours, an organizer from Casa Mexico, Jared Dominguez, had similarly mentioned that he had been questioned by the FBI relevant to his organizing with greengrocers and his organizing of laundry workers. So clearly the agents of the policing apparatus of the state are intruding mightily into the world of work and organizing and workers' rights, and that's a very ominous at this stand. What do people begin to do to support the day laborers, and what kind of legislation needs to take place to protect them? And why don't we start with Brooklyn, and then we'll work our way back to Hempstead and Oscar?
In terms of legislation, we have to legislate for rights for day laborers, because
everything.
Day laborers are the modern slaves in this country. Because there is any rights to protect day laborers.
Just in terms of that, I know out on the island there have been shaping centers that were formed. But has anybody proposed something that's gotten off the ground within New York City with regard to an actual shaping center that's indoors, a hiring hall?
We opened the first job center on Williamsburg and Bedford and Division in year 2000. And our second job center we opened on Bay Parkway last year, which is very success, because in that job center we mobilized the politicians, police department, and the community. So we educate them, because they say they have a quality of life project and throughout the streets. And we say, listen, we have the quality of life project. That quality of life is going to benefit everybody in the community is organized the day laborers. And the day laborers need space to stay. So a very safety space. Then the contractors go to that place and hire, negotiate salaries with the workers, and then they sign some agreement. So the workers are protected, and we finish that, you know, on the street, there's jumping 20, 10 workers over the car. So we finished that situation. So now in the job centers, very, very organized. And also the workers take advantage. During the day, they have different type of workshops and English classes, ESL classes, carpenter workshops, and labor rights. So they take a lot of advantage, yeah.
One of the things I'm interested in, we will go back to Hempstead, is are the workers, how do you begin to organize them? How do you begin to get them as a force rather than individuals vying for jobs so that they become a mighty engine for change for their own benefit? And, of course, when their rights are benefited, so it is with all workers. And Juan, as an organizer, give us some of the understandings of what makes people who have no rights, clearly are fearful and subject to tremendous abuse, come together, or do they?
So we start explaining the people that are humans, you know, there is no slaves anymore, and we need to keep the right to a right pay, to no discriminations, because so many of the people is not speaking the language. So we try to the people understand they got a leadership, you know, and how are human beings. That's the way to start to talk about what we can do together, because we like to work like teams. It's not like something personal or some kind of new heroes are coming to the community. We are not working like that. We are working with the workers, making a teams, making to knowledge to the people who, what are your labor rights, your human rights. And we start to talk about that with the meetings and try to find a space, because we know the streets are very dangerous now, especially now with the empowerment to the police and that kind of law about to clean the streets, to keep everybody out of the streets.
And also to add, it's very important to know what is the needs of the workers, to start to organize. If we don't know the needs, we don't do nothing. So what is the need of the workers and how we going to deal with that? How we going to resolve? Well, we going to work in that. So then, you know, the workers are afraid also from us too, because they don't know us. We go into the street and say, oh, okay, we're going to come to organize you people. No, so we start to talk in terms of needs. And that's our main key. And also, it is very important to understand the culture, to understand, to speak the same language.
Maybe some building bridges, community and labor strategies.
Oh, yeah.
And building bridges also to our comrades out on Long Island, which is, well, Brooklyn and Queens are part of Long Island, actually. But we really don't think of it that way. Well, it's a different political jurisdiction. But in terms of, I mean, against the backdrop of this tragedy in Farmingville and also the threats of the federal government incursions and the constant threats of the police incursions, but how do you see the future, the next year or two, with regard to organizing day laborers on the island, Nadia?
I think the next year or two are going to be very difficult because of the threat of the police and of immigration. The organizing that we've been doing up until now has been, we could say to workers, you are legally able to do this, and INS has never come and interfered with this kind of organizing up until now. Now that it's Homeland Security, who knows? And that's not going to stop workers from organizing. As Oscar said, when workers need something, when workers are determined to get something, they organize for it regardless of the risks. We've seen, you know, workers who are undocumented stand up and take bigger risks than people who've lived here, you know, who were born here and lived here all their lives. So I think that's just the way, you know, people are. But I think that, you know, that there's going to be a lot of work to do with regard to day laborers. It seems to me that it's, you know, it's getting more and more to be seen as an easy target. I think that, you know, government targets the ones who are easiest to go, and day laborers are one of those. One thing that I wanted to mention was you asked about legislation. And although we don't have anything particularly here, I know that the National Day Labor Organizing Network, of which both our organization and the Latin American Workers Project are members, they've drafted something which is, I think it's called the Day Labor Fairness Act, something like that. I'm not sure of the exact name, but it is legislation at a national level which proposes protections for day laborers across the country. And obviously it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be an easy struggle, but there are some models there, and, you know, the Day Labor Network has drafted some legislation to start to propose, I think, in the coming legislative cycle.
And if people want to find out more about the Workplace Project on Long Island and Hempstead, Long Island, do you have a website? What's your phone number? How do people get in touch with you?
We don't have a website, but we do have a phone, and our phone number is 516-565-5377.
Do that one more time, Nadia.
Okay, the number is 516-565-5377.
And Oscar and Juan, why don't we give you the last words? How can people get in touch with you folks in Brooklyn? And lastly, what do we need to know?
Okay, they can call to 718-486-0800 to the Latin American Workers
One more
project.
Time.
718-486-0800.
And Juan, do you need some recruits to help organize? Do you need some resources?
Yeah, we are looking for a space for Tech to start the new job center in Roosevelt for the day labor. So maybe we're going to need a lot of help.
And volunteers, a lot of
volunteers.
English teachers, mm-hmm. Spanish teachers.
Oh, no, that's very important. So tell us, Oscar, exactly what you need, what kind of people can help out.
Mm-hmm.
You said people who can teach English.
Can teach Spanish. And also volunteers to help to coordinate some different activities in Queens. Because Roosevelt is the most biggest day labor corner in New York. So we have to mobilize in two different ways. So we need a lot of volunteers to plan and organize different strategies.
So give that phone number one more time.
718-486-0800.
Take seriously what Nadia Marin Molina, Executive Director of the Workplace Project in Hempstead, and Oscar Paredes, Executive Director in my hometown, Brooklyn, and Juan Valentin, organizer of the Latin American Workers Project, are saying, help them with resources and organizing and teaching, and let's build the kind of movement that thwarts efforts to keep people, as Oscar said, really indentured or enslaved. And I'd like to thank all three of you for being our guests on Building Bridges, your community and labor report. And we're going to make sure to have you back and talk more as the projects develop. Thank you all for listening. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Keep that organizing going.
Good night.